All right, our second case is City of Justin versus Wesolock, cause number 2-15-379-CV. And only appellant is going to be arguing today, is my understanding, and it will be Mr. Fisher for about 10 minutes. Please proceed.
I am Evan Fisher. I'm here representing appellant City of Justin in this case. And I do thank you for allowing me a little bit of time to talk about the issues in this case. I want to briefly start with a tiny summary of the facts, that this appeal is an interlocutory appeal. It's arising out of a lawsuit filed by Ronald Wesolock, who's a landowner and a resident of the City of Justin, Texas. He owns some residential property, which is actually two different lots, and those two lots are located entirely within the city limits of the City of Justin. He's owned this land, I think, from 2014, and his land is subject to the city's code of ordinances. The primary issue in the lawsuit, and I use the word primary very carefully because there's a lot of kind of issues that are hidden or lurking under the surface, is whether or not the city can enforce its code of ordinances, specifically its zoning ordinance, for violations caused by Mr. Wesolock's fence. As soon as criminal proceedings began, Mr. Wesolock sued the city for injunctive and other types of relief. He asserted lots of different constitutional arguments. He failed to provide notice to the Attorney General as required by law, and ultimately is trying to restrain the city from prosecuting him under its zoning ordinance.
Well, so, I have a question. Is the city still proceeding on the ground that Mr. Wesolock, is that how you say it, Wesolock?
I believe it's Wesolock.
Wesolock violated section 12.1004, or has that been abandoned?
That is, I think that's a very important question. He has only been criminally prosecuted for the violations of the fence blocking the easement, which I believe is, I've got the ordinance section here. It's not that section. It's 12.1002. Those are the only things he's actually been criminally prosecuted for. The original citations that were issued, that were presented as attachments in Mr. Wesolock's brief, before they came to trial, those citations formed only the date for the actual criminal complaints that were filed against him in this court. Mr. Wesolock was served with these complaints prior to trial, and then at that point pled no contest to all eight counts.
So does the city still maintain that Wesolock violated 12.1004, or has the city abandoned that
The
claim?
City does not maintain that, and upon advice from the city attorney's office, no criminal proceedings were ever, continued or initiated.
Okay. Then how is your plea to the jurisdiction based on that section now not moot?
Well, to the extent that anything is moot, I would maintain that those portions of the original petition filed by the plaintiff are moot, that he's no longer facing any criminal liability for a prosecution under that section of the ordinance. Unfortunately, what the plaintiff has done in his petition is include so much multifarious claims that if I read his petition, he's seeking an injunction restraining the city from enforcing any ordinance on his land related to his fence in any way. And it really does go too far. If that type of relief were to be granted to Mr. Wesolock, he could build his fence 100 feet high. He could build his fence out of marijuana. He could do whatever he wanted on his land, which I think is the basis of the lawsuit in the first place. It's sort of a you can't tell me what to do on my land type of petition. The claims in there range from allegations that criminal penalties are an unconstitutional tax to a claim that arises under the state's ability to grant exemptions from ad valorem taxation. I don't even understand some of these claims, and I've read this petition multiple times. The reason that the city's plea of jurisdiction should have been granted is that it's the plaintiff's responsibility to properly invoke the jurisdiction in the first place. So if we come back to the issues of the civil procedure, If he fails to invoke the subject matter jurisdiction in his petition, then the case must be dismissed. The subject matter jurisdiction can't be presumed. Now, the City of Justin is a general law municipality incorporated under the laws of the state of Texas. So it has governmental immunity from suit that has to be specifically waived. Now, nowhere in the plaintiff's original petition does he describe a waiver of suit. Now, it's important that he do that. It's his burden to do that. It's the
responsibility. A waiver of suit? I'm sorry.
A waiver of the immunity. I apologize if I misspoke. So this waiver of government or governmental immunity has to be specifically pleaded by the plaintiff. Those are the keys that unlock the door to the courtroom for him. Now, without an affirmative showing of the waiver, it must be presumed that there's governmental immunity from the suit. Now, beyond this, beyond just requiring a plaintiff to meet his basic pleading requirements, there's the fact that many of the claims, if not all of the claims, in the plaintiff's petition are constitutional in nature. He's alleging repeated violations of his constitutional rights, his right to due process, his right to be free of illegal taxation. He's used the word constitutional and violation of constitutional rights over and over and over again in his petition until the city brought up the AG notification requirement. Once the city brought up the requirement
where,
that the
where does he plead that? Where does he plead that it's unconstitutional? I mean, I'm looking at his petition, and it looks like his cause of actions are for declaratory judgment, a constitutional takings claim, a temporary injunction. I don't know where you're getting that he's pleaded
I'm looking. If I don't know if you have it in front of me, his original petition, paragraph 3.01, redress deprivations by the defendant acting under the color of state law of certain rights secured to the plaintiff by the Texas Constitution. So that's in his first paragraph of jurisdiction. 3.02, application of the ordinance to be violative of the plaintiff's rights guaranteed to them by the Texas Constitution.
Right. I believe he's trying to plead a takings claim there, not that the ordinance itself is unconstitutional.
I think that's a very liberal reading. I could definitely come to that conclusion. One of the problems that the city faces is that it's very unclear. It's unclear exactly what type of relief that he's requesting. It's unclear exactly what type of constitutional defects he's alleged. But when he goes as far as to request, in his request for relief in his original petition, an injunction to bar the city from issuing citations or prosecuting him in a criminal court, at that point, he's gone as far to say, this law is no good, it's invalid, and if that's not rooted in constitutional validity, I can't tell from his petition where he gets that idea. I don't know whether he's saying it's invalid because it's unconstitutional, whether he's saying it's invalid because there wasn't a quorum present at the city council that night when they passed the ordinance, but certainly he didn't allege that, or whether it's invalid because he simply doesn't like it and doesn't want it applied to him and his land, which I think is the correct answer. But based on the nature of his pleadings, it's very unclear to the city, and it's unfair to the city to have to defend against those types of throw all the spaghetti at the wall type of allegations and claims. I mean, if I can address more specifically this AG requirement, I mean, even if the plaintiff is relieved of his burden to correctly invoke the subject matter jurisdiction of the court by overcoming the city's governmental immunity, he still has to join the Attorney General as a party to this lawsuit, in so much as he is alleging that the application of this ordinance is violating his constitutional rights. Now, the ordinance states very clearly, no fence shall be built in any easement. If it doesn't apply to Mr. Westlake's fence, which he's built across an easement, who does it apply to?
Well, but I thought that 37.006B only requires the Attorney General to be served when a statute, ordinance, or franchise is alleged to be unconstitutional. So if he's saying that as applied to him, it's unconstitutional, and he's not seeking a declaration from the trial court that it's facially unconstitutional, are you saying that the AG still has to be joined?
Yes, I am. I, whether it's an as-applied challenge or a facial challenge, and I would argue that really, if you get into the meat of his argument, it is a facial challenge. But assuming arguendo, it's an as-applied challenge. The AG still needs to be notified because the state of Texas has an interest in knowing whether municipalities can enforce their zoning ordinance. If the answer is no, they can't enforce zoning ordinances, that has wide-sweeping effects all across the state. And that's why the AG's office should be notified in this case. You know, the remedy in the case law for failure to serve the AG very clearly is dismissal. You know, that's in Commissioner's Court of Harris County versus People's National Utility Company, Gatesco versus Houston. If the Attorney General is not noticed within a reasonable time, dismissal is the proper remedy. I see that my time is up. I appreciate you allowing me to speak on this case. If there are any follow-up questions, I'm happy to answer them.
I don't believe so, but thank you. We appreciate you being here and your arguments and your briefing on this case. Your case is now submitted, and we will adjourn court. Thank you.
All rise.